This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome back to the Masters of Modern podcast. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, with my co-host, Ben Bateman, and welcome to the announcement of the Modern Horizon 2 Awards nominations. That's the kind of the Price is Right's experience. Hello, Ben Bateman,
co-host. Hello. How are you, Alex?
I'm good. Last week we announced that this episode might be just the actual thing, but I think we're actually going to do it live Tuesday evening at 7:30 p.m. PST. But for those who don't know, we are a modern adjacent focused podcast, the MMCast. We're talking about mostly modern things and today and often modern related content, though we do stuff on EDH. Every Monday night we do a Commander stream that'll be starting up next week or tonight as well. We took a few breaks off for the holiday, but Modern Horizons 2 is out and decks are being played and cards are being priced out of being able to afford them until the actual cards hit the market.
They're because who knows how expensive, right?
Well, they're expensive
in the pre-order sense.
In the pre-order. They're like because the problem with the pre-order here is that the good cards for Modern Horizons 1 are $100. And no one knows yet what the good cards are. Once the set comes out, those good cards will stay that $100 price point, right? That's the range. But all the other ones will drop down to reasonable prices. That's the problem here. Is you're seeing the normal standard pre-order stuff where there's like $50 cards, right? Like there are standard pre-orders that you'll get up to $40 to $50. And then everything drops down. And that's what is just with Modern Horizons, everything's doubled. So that normally $40 to $50 tier one card is $100. And the other problem is this set is so packed with power that there's a ton of them that could be a $100 card in a year. So no one knows what's good.
I haven't bought a physical Magic card in 15 months. I don't think, unless I'm forgetting, and I did get one pack, but I've played almost exclusively on Arena. Or proxied. I haven't gone to a store and I haven't played with people. So ordering packs and stuff, it's just, I don't usually like crack a box, but I did the other day pre-order a booster box of Horizons 2. I decided to do it. I guess actually the last time I did that was Commander Legends. I did buy myself a box of Commander Legends kind of recently. And, that was the first one. So this will be the second one I've bought. And, I'm very excited about it. The set has so many cool cards. And the thing that's great about the set, we're going to talk about this a lot tonight, is it has a lot of really cool mythics. It has a lot of really cool rares. It has a lot of really sweet uncommons. Like,
it's got great
and
commons.
Then all of the, a lot of the fancy stuff too, the like fancy card versions you can open are just awesome. They're all awesome. So I was pretty excited. It's expensive. I mean, I was surprised when I went to pre-order the box because it's not 24 packs. It's 36 packs.
Yes.
Which, is, you know, 36 premium packs, it's expensive. Like there's a reason. So that was a gift to myself on that one.
Yep. Well, it's like I got surprised because with Modern Horizons 2, I had purchased Modern Horizons 1, I bought two boxes. And after drafting one once, and now we've drafted another one, I was like, oh, that would be it. And then I have an entire third draft available worth of Modern Horizons 1.
Oh, was Horizons 1 36 as well?
Yes.
For some reason, I thought it was 24.
No, because they're both 36, yeah. And then Modern Horizons 2 is the same deal. So that's really exciting. And then I'm excited to even try doing like a Modern Horizons 1 and 2 co-draft, kind of the way we did the Time Spiral one, to see if that's a cool thing. Or even draft them together, do you know, or maybe do like four packs, do like two and two and do something cool like that, or like mix up formats.
I feel like Time Spiral remastered with the two Horizon sets would be a pretty awesome draft format. That's got a lot of similar mechanics. That'd be really fun. So
power level is way worse, which we found out last time. But so they explain what the Modern Horizons 2 Academy Awards or awards voting. We're the Academy. Alex Kessler, Ben Bateman, Masters of Modern. But in reality, what we did is I created a nomination process. We've shared it on our Discord, which you can join if you want to click the link below. There's a lot of cool conversations happening there. We shared it on Twitter. We shared it on Facebook. We shared it on the podcast episode last week. And it was just a list of categories, different nominations. Now, not all categories made it to the awards. For instance, Uncommons and Rares and Mythic did not make it, but Commons did. That's for Pauper players out there. A bunch of other different options came up. Some of it was just like there was no nomination consensus. Best artwork, literally we got 13. No, we got, I think we had 35 different pieces of artwork flatly voted for. Like not one person picked the same artwork. And I was like, I can't limit this down. I don't know. So that was removed. But we ended up with, I believe it's 17 categories across the board that we'll be going over. This includes best red card, best black card, best green card, best blue card, best white card, best artifact, best gold card, best land, best new to modern reprint, best new card printed, funniest card, best flavor reference, best common, best legendary creature, best card for the 99 in Commander that's not a legendary creature, most likely to get banned, and best card. And that is the 17 categories. There's some repeats. We're going to go over each of the nominations today. This is the first time we're announcing those nominations for the world. And voting will continue until the end or the beginning of Tuesday morning, our time. And then we'll announce, or I guess maybe even up into the awards themselves live. Well, there'll be a cutoff point sometime Tuesday. So make sure to get your vote in on Tuesday. Before Tuesday next week. So you have 24 hours after this episode is released on Monday morning. We'll be doing a live stream on Tuesday night on the Twitch channel. We normally do the Commander stream, twitch.tv/KessWiley. And that gives you your chance to vote for these nominations, and we're going to go over them. This is what we're doing instead of the review. Normally, when we do a set review, we go over every, you know, we pick a few cards. Sometimes we do a top 10. There's just so many cards in this set that it was really hard to just go over every card that's possible. We're going to be talking about this set forever. Last week, we did kind of a preemptive which new decks were created and which old decks get better and kind of talked about which cards we think were doing that. And then now we're just talking about the best of the best of all these categories. So without further ado, let's go through the nomination process or not nomination process, the nominations. So nominated for best red card, we have four options. Rugavun. What's the second half of what the card is
Nimble
called?
Pilferer, I
Nimble
believe.
Pilferer, Imperial Recruiter, Goblin Bombardment, and Blazing Rootwalla, which snuck in just under the line. These are
really good ones.
Yeah, so Imperial Recruiter is definitely maybe the reprint I was most excited by. And we talked pretty much in depth last week of all the cool things you could do. The fact that it finds Karmic Guide, it finds Splinter Twin, it finds Kiki Jiki and Pester Mite, or Deceiver Exarch. Like it finds all the pieces of that combo on its own is really powerful. I'm always a big fan of toolbox cards. This is also a creature that comes into play that then can be blinked. So it's like really good in countercat decks as well. I'm pretty hyped on this card just being existing. You're really hyped about our little monkey friend.
I mean, Ragavan is like real high on my list of things that I'm the most stoked on. I feel for multiple reasons. I feel for the purpose that he's like in all formats. Like, first of all, in the old days, just a two mana or just a one mana 2/1 creature in any color was good. That was like a thing that was good. Savannah Lions was a freaking rare. So then Isimaru was like, well, we can give you a 2/2 for one because it's legendary. It's like, oh, okay. So we're really getting the extra piece of toughness here. And then now they've pushed it and they've pushed it. And so now you're telling me that I get for one mana, a 2/1 that whenever it deals damage to you, accelerates me and gets me a card. And the acceleration happens where I can sacrifice it to get the color that I need to cast the card. But also it has dash, so I can put it into play and get it back to my hand every single turn if I want to. And I can take advantage of ETB effects. Like, it's just bananas. This card is so powerful. If this card had cost 2 mana, I would still be talking about how good it was, is the crazy thing. I would still be talking about how insane this was if it was red 1.
Is this card better than Goblin Guide?
Yes, far better.
Okay.
I think the reason is because, so if by turn 2, Goblin Guide's going to get 4 damage, right? It's going to cost you 2 mana for 4 damage.
Mm-hmm.
And by the third turn, probably Goblin Guide's dead. but it'll
one mana
probably
for four
be
damage.
Say what?
You said two mana for four damage.
Oh, sure. Yeah, one mana for four damage. Yeah. Correct, because you don't have to recast it. It's going to cost you one mana for four damage. Probably it's dead by the third turn, and they've probably gotten a land out of it. Is the guess, right? So it's you've traded red four to the dome.
Probably is the an incorrect word, but there's a risk of them getting a land off of it.
I mean, a 60 card deck, 23 lands, and they have two shots. They don't have a 50-50 shot. They have like a 42-58 shot, but it's a pretty good shot.
It's like a 60, it's a 60% chance, right? So, or that they miss. So yeah. I mean,
it's like 40-60. I'm saying the odds are still decent, right? So like the idea that for two mana on turn two, I'm going to get two damage, but I will also have the opportunity to get a card. And I will accelerate myself, and my creature's not on the battlefield for you to kill it, is insane. Yeah. Or for one mana, if they don't kill it, you just play it on turn one, and on turn two, you're still getting in two damage, you're getting the card, you're getting, like, it's so much better. What Goblin Guide is doing, I guess, is better for exactly the deck that wants Goblin Guide.
Right.
So I guess that's the difference, is that you would play Guide over this card, probably, but you might even play two of these in that deck anyway, just because it's part of it.
It's not like they're exclusive to each other. They can hang out. This is legendary too, so you don't necessarily want to go as deep onto it. And I do agree that, like, I think you in Burn, you play Goblin Guide over Ragavan. But I think this card is going to see significantly more play against multiple archetypes and is already doing so.
Yeah.
Next, we have Goblin Bombardment on the list. Like an enchantment red, free sac outlet. Is already just going to do really cool things. The ability for it to kind of give aristocrat decks a real damaging sac outlet is really powerful. It's another card that does actually really well with Imperial Recruiter. It also allows you to do like non-black based, Naya based kind of a Kitchen Finks combos, like the old Malira combo from Birthing Pod. You guys had to play black because there was no good red sac outlets. Now you have this plus the dragon. The three mana 2/2 that becomes a 4/4 dragon when you sacrifice. So you now have that option of doing like kind of like a collected company Goblin Bombardment Aristocrats deck that has that backup plan of the Malira combo, which I think is really rich, is cool. And offensive combo, right?
I mean, with this, what I always will say is that when we look for cards to put into Highlander decks, which is basically all cards, it's basically like Legacy. When you look for cards to put into those decks, Bombardment's the best sac outlet. Like, everybody knows that. It's sort of the standard, like, OG. There's some of the artifact ones that are cool, but Bombardment usually is the one that has some amount of infinite combo loop to it because it provides damage and an outlet.
But you don't need it to be infinite, right? Like, the other sac outlets are always, like, you're trying to create an infinite combo, either making mana or milling.
Yeah.
Gamma Bombardment doesn't need that. You just need 20 creatures. Yeah,
it's just a great card. It costs two. But the one thing about Bombardment that's interesting is then the decks you're talking about, those decks often play a bunch of creature tutors. And those decks play creature tutors because they're creature combo decks. Those creature tutors cannot search for a Goblin Bombardment.
Well, that's why you play the dragon. That's why you play you play one of the dragon because that card is bad other than the fact that it goes infinite. And you play like three of these because these are good.
Yeah,
like those decks have always classically been their best strength is I win. You are stressed out because at any moment I'm going to infinite you. And in the meantime, while you're worried about me infiniting you, I'm beating you down with creatures and hate bears that punch you in the face. That's like why Imperial Recruiter would be good in that tech, too. A, because it finds that sac outlet, but B, and it finds every other part of that combo. But
right.
B, it also just like finds you the hate card you need. Do you need something to turn them off from hurting you? Great. Imperial Recruiter is there. And then Gamma Bombardment is there to help be a sack out in that. And add that to cool zombie grind decks that are, you know, doing stuff or vengeance. You know, there's a bunch of other stuff that a free sack outlet that does damage is going to be good in. And the last card is Blazing Root Walla. So this one has already started seeing play in I'm never gonna say the other card right. Whatever, every single letter in the alphabet. Lady who finds you a cookbook.
Like if I say Gristle Hornbutterburger.
Yes, that. And then, but with cookbook specifically, her cookbook, Blazing Root Walla and in Vendrine list, right? Like the green Root Walla was always a card that I wanted to be able to like make Vengevine work, because being able to discard Vengevines and then this be one of the creatures you play off of a discard is like really good. And they've now printed good discard outlets and this, and it's just perfect little amalgamation of a great card. And it's powerful, right? Like it's a pretty good for a zero mana threat. It's that technically draws you a card when it enters play, right? That's the power of madness, is if you can cast something for its madness cost, you're drawing whatever the thing that made you discard as a cost do. Like most things that make you discard, you're discarding as a cost. And Blazing Root Wallet lets you draw an extra card for free and get that card in the play. So I think that's one of its power levels, is it turns what are classically costs into a free creature, a free aggressive threat.
The thing that's always interesting about cards like Blazing Root Wallet is that they're such a testament to the design philosophy and power level of where Magic has gotten to. Because I think Basking Root Wallet, the fact that that card hasn't just been reprinted into Standard at some point is like surprising to me. But it's also like, you know, it interacts like not favorably with a lot of different things when they want to balance Standard formats, because, you know, it's not overtly powerful. It's just that it gives you something that doesn't usually exist. You don't usually get to get it just a free creature out of a discard, especially one that can attack for 3 power. This card is interesting because it's not a functional reprint, right? They scaled down the pump mana, but it's only +2/+0 instead of +1 instead of +2/+2. And green is not a color that gives any craps about discarding cards. Like they just, that's right. Not a green thing. They like, that was a green blue thing way back in the day. Red is all about the reverse loop. That's like a thing that red has really picked up steam on the last few years. So the idea they're like, okay, this is a red thing, and we're now at a place where modern as a format is just like, this will be a common, we don't care.
Yeah.
Like, go for it.
It's like, as far as tournament playable cards go, red has had more discard cards than any card color by like a, I think a wide margin. Now black might have more holistically, like there's just more cards that care about discarding cards, but reds are the ones that are good for whatever reason. Yeah. And then the last card, and nominations can range anywhere from 3 to 6, and for red we have 5, and the last card is Dragon's Rage Channeler. This is another one drop. We got a big library of one drop red creatures, surprising no one. 1 for a human shaman, 1/1, whenever you cast a non-creature spell, surveil 1, surveil's back, baby. And then Delirium, as long as there are 4 or more card types among cards in your graveyard, Dragon's Rage Channeler gets +2/+2 as flying and attacks each turn if able. This is just new, better Delver of Secrets. And I'm going to say it is better than Delver of Secrets.
Well, you classically hate Delver of Secrets, let's be honest.
I don't hate Delver of Secrets.
You have so much hate for Delver. It's like astonishing.
No, I think it's bad. Card. Like, it's not a hatred thing. Like, there are cards
that
I hate.
Sounds like hate.
Right? Like there are cards that I think are, I don't like playing against that are good, right? Like, I would hate playing against Wasteland and Modern, as an example. Or I maybe hate Days, specifically. I do hate Days. I don't hate Delver of Secrets. I think Delver of Secrets is very good in Legacy because Brainstorm and Ponder exist. And I think Days and Wasteland exist. And I think it's very bad in Modern because none of those things exist. And so it's sometimes you get a 3/2 on turn 4 for 1 if you drew it on turn 1 card. This card, on the other hand, is a 1-mana 1/1 that surveils every card you play, which is an insane ability. So like, if that's all this card did, I would be excited by this card, right? Like, if that's on its front level, is 1 mana for a 1/1, every time you cast a non-creature spell, surveil 1, already hyped, already adding it to like 6 commander decks, already thinking about all the cool things you could do about it. Modern, I'm gonna put Phoenixes in the deck with it. And but then you add the fact that like, and it's non-creature spell, so planeswalkers, artifacts, enchantments, all of that trigger it. Then you add Delirium, which means that just like every deck that wants to play a Bauble gets to just turn Delirium on with this thing. And then now you get the 3/2 doing an action that you're already wanting to do. And it's a 3/3. So, yeah, I don't know. This card's hype. It's better than Delver Secrets. Delver Secrets can go die in a ditch in Modern as far as I care.
Okay, you're just being rude now. I think with this card, what's funny about it is it falls victim to so many of the classic things that cards that don't just exist as like when Delver flips. Okay, here's the deal. You play Delver on turn 1. When Delver flips on turn 2, accidentally, you have a 3-mana flying creature that's attacking on turn 2. You commit no more resources to it. It just is what it is. Now, I understand you draw it later in the game or it doesn't flip. That's fine. But the reason Delver's
plays
good,
like 4 levels of removal spells better than Legacy.
Sure, that's fine. I'm not saying that Delver's amazing. I'm just saying that this card is +1/+2 for Delirium, and the Surveil thing is cool, but like, what about when you just like attack and I remove your graveyard at instant speed with any number of the things that I'm probably playing? Because like,
well, you drew two cards and maybe four cards, right? Like, Surveilling one after every spell you cast to get to if you play this on turn one and then on turn two, which you can get there, you can get to Delirium, but on turn two you also just cast two spells and now you surveil two off of those two spells, including putting cards that you want in your graveyard for a card that wants cards to be in your graveyard. That's so much value already. Like, it plays more like a Viscera Seer until it's a Delver, where a Delver doesn't do anything. It is a 1/1 on the floor that doesn't do anything for you.
Totally. It's possible this card is better than Delver. It is possible. I'm not telling you
it's
that I think
flatter.
You're wrong.
It's flatter than Delver. How about that?
It does something. Yeah. If you like, if I play my Delver and you just like have a blocker and like, that's it, you have a flying blocker that's good enough to kill or block my Delver, then my whole game plan's screwed. I recognize that this card is going to get me Surveil a couple times. Even if it's a turn I know I'm going to have to attack, then it has Delirium and it's going to die into a blocker, I'll still probably get a couple Delirium triggers off of it.
And there's the mystery of it, right? Like, if my opponent has a Delver in play and they flip it, I'm going to use my Lightning Bolt on it immediately. I'm going to use my Fail to Push on it immediately. If my opponent plays Dragon Rage Channeler, I don't probably use my removal spell on it until it flips, right? So then they're getting the value off of their 1/1 in the meantime versus Delver, where they're not as much. And like, yes, Delver of Secrets, turn one, my opponent doesn't have a removal spell and I reveal an instant or sorcery, which is a lot less things than non-creature spell, and I flip it, is better than this card. But like, that's what I'm saying. Like, the height of Delver is better, but most of Modern isn't the height. It's the middle. And this is better in the middle and has moments where turn one, I play this. Turn two, I fetch, play Bauble, play any instant or sorcery that mills cards, and I'm now there, right? Like, I already, or like I fetch, cast Bauble, play an instant, play a sorcery. I now have a 3/3 flying on turn one. Played a bunch of good cards, and
why am I not just but also like, aren't we just playing this with Delver in the same deck? Because in reality, like,
I don't think
this
people
makes
should
my Delver.
Don't play Delver.
Does this just make my Delver better because I can surveil away the thing that isn't the instant or sorcery spell?
Play Death Shadow, like the good Delver in Modern.
I mean, I'm not telling you Delver's amazing. I'm just saying, like, I think I would play a deck with this and Delver together. That just to me makes like a lot of sense. And also, wouldn't, because you have Surveil, because you probably are playing, like, I guess looting is not legal, but like, wouldn't you just be playing both cards in like a blue red Phoenix deck? Wouldn't that just be what you
would
do?
In Legacy, I would play Dragon's Rage Channeler and Delver. In Modern, I would play Dragon Rage Channeler and Death Shadow and not play Delver.
You're just a jerk. Let's move on from the topic.
We should move on. I just think Delver is a bad card in Modern.
It's 10-18 and we've gotten through three cards. This is a disaster.
One category. All right, next category. And we'll maybe spend a little less time on red, which apparently is the most contentious category. We got best black card. We got four cards in best black card. We got number one is Grief. Number two is Dwathi Voidwalker. Number three is Damn. And number four is Persist. There are only four in this category.
Sick category. Like, first of all, we previewed one of these cards. We actually got two insanely powerful preview cards this time, which is so cool. Like, Wizards gave us insane cards. Like Voidwalker has an argument for being in the top three or four cards in the whole set. That card is really good.
We have best card as a category at the end of the podcast, Ben.
Okay. Okay, just saying. So starting from the beginning, for me, like, and I don't know if you disagree here, but I think Grief is a strong contender for best card in the whole set. So like, I actually feel like if we start at the top here, Grief probably is the best of these four, just because like, it's doing something so uniquely powerful and it's free to do it. So I think we've said a lot about Grief. It feels like it's probably the best of the four. Do you have anything to add on that card we haven't already said?
I would not say it's necessarily the best of these four cards. I do think it's very good. I think we're talking about in many of these categories, every single one of these categories is going to have cards that are in the best cards of all time in the set, right? Grief we've talked a lot about it. We talked about it a lot last week, I think. And for time's sake, I agree. Let's move on. I also think for Voidwalker, we did a whole preview card episode on it. Highly recommend going to that one. It continues to be impressive. People have found ways to loop it. We didn't even mention its ability to interact with Luros, which was a miss on our part, but obviously is extremely powerful. Damn is being heralded as the best board wipe of all time. Which I think is coming from the perspective that there was arguments that Wrath of God itself was already the best board wipe of all time. And Damn just adds a dual face card, black removal spell to it that you could always just cast. And it also gets around, targeted stuff because of the weird stuff. I think like it does kill. Yeah. It does some like weird things because it doesn't target. It's overload versus anything else. So, I think Damn and both sides of Dam are going to be staples, but then we also got
Persist, which like compared to the other cards we're talking about feels less powerful, but like Persist is just Animate Dead, which has like been one of the most played Legacy Reanimator cards ever, except now we have it in Modern. It's a little different because it's non-legendary, so it does feel like of the four this is the redheaded stepchild. It's the least powerful of the four, but like this category is bonkers. They like they really went ham on black.
And like yes and no, right? Like Of the cards that these cards are holding, I think Grief being comparable to Thoughtseize is like Thoughtseize is one of the most played cards of all time. Damn though is like Wrath of God is not the most played card in the format, right? Like it's a good card. Wrath has seen a ton of play in Modern, and a two mana black removal spell also sees a decent amount of play in Modern. So both halves are that really good and keeps the power level. Animate Dead is a Legacy staple still, and like Commander staple everywhere. Persist probably just sees play in those formats alongside Animate Dead. If you're not trying to get like the thing you can't get Grizzlebrand, you can't get Elesh Norn, right? Like that's the big loss. What you can get is a bunch of other powerful things. And in Legacy, like for a while, the demon that makes everyone discard their hands has actually been the more played reanimate target for a long time out of decks like Dredge. So I think Persist is going to be great. I think this card's like maybe even currently being a little underrated.
I mean, I think all four of these cards are very good.
It's a very competitive category.
If I had to guess the one that I think is going to end up seeing the most play of all four of these cards, it's Damn. And I think the reason is because being in double black and having a creature that does what Voidwalker does, like having a 3/2 unblockable essentially that's doing this is really cool, but like it doesn't totally belong unless you're playing a deck that kind of wants to be killing them with damage, because there's a lot of different things that get rid of graveyards. Like Leylines is free if it's just in your opening hand, like people play that card. Mm-hmm. You know, and like I do think that Grief is awesome, but also there's going to be decks that are like, I don't really want a 2-for-1 myself to get this going on turn one, and I'm not really a deck that wants to play this creature. Like I'll just play Thoughtseize, that's enough for me. I was doing well enough with my Thoughtseizes, you know.
Yeah,
but I think Damn is kind of the odd man out card of this whole category, because it's like it's already card. black for what it does is just so good. That's already such like a solid effect. Like all of the different 2-mana spells that get played, from everything from like Terminates, Dreadbore, Abrupt Decays, like effects like that are very played anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that this is just black for a comparable effect to what we already have, but then the backside of it is like a type of card that we'll always see play in every format as a 2-3 of in mid-range and control decks forever, but you get both on the same card, and all that's required is that you're just playing a black-white deck, which I'll admit, playing a heavy black-white deck, black-black and white-white, it's not the most ideal. Like, a Jund is a little sweeter, but like, can you tell me I'm playing Abzan or Esper and I have to have heavy mana considerations to play this card? I'll just do it. It's so good. It does so many of the things that decks like that want to be able to do with one card.
Yeah, I think to me, the color issue is the big issue there, right? Like, now, I think people are underrating just playing Damn by itself. I agree with you. Like, just a straight-up murder in black-black, meaning you don't have to play Terminate, right? Like, right now, the only other card in Modern that just for 2 mana kills a creature, no matter what that creature is Terminate. And that's at instant speed. Like, Dreadboard does that, plus a Planeswalker at sorcery speed. So, but, like, you can play this in any non-red deck is, like, a value play. Like, any black-green white deck, any black blue deck, like anything that doesn't need red, this now is an option. And then add all of the Espers of the World and the Orzhovs and the Abzans, where you get to now cast the Overload half, and it obviously is extraordinarily powerful. I think it's gold status is to me, it's gold status it to me is its big knock. Like, kind of your point with grief is like, grief has a real cost. Discarding your hand or exiling a card from your hand is not a non-zero cost to that card. And the problem with grief on the other hand is you have to commit to it, right? Like, you kind of can't, maybe on games two and game three you don't do it, but pretty much against any opponent, if you're playing grief in your deck, you need to play a deck that is okay mulliganing to six and still being able to win to some extent. With obviously your opponent also mulliganing to six and getting their best card out of their hand.
Also, though, but don't forget the fact decks in Magic mulligan. They do. Like, even the best decks are the most balanced costs. They mulligan all the time. It happens in Magic constantly. What you're telling me is that in the game where I'm playing grief in my main deck and I don't get the best opening hand, that I mold a six, and now I mold a six and grief is in that opening hand, I have to be willing to pop it off in a six card opener.
Right. Like, you're always able to just cast it for four mana eventually if you like, or like hold on to it turn two, turn three to draw into it. Like, all four of these cards are amazing, and any of them deserve the win. The best green card award goes Ignoble Hierarch, Endurance, Gaia's Will, and Chatterfang. Ignoble Hierarch is I believe currently one of the favorites to win. That's the new
Noble Hierarch,
but in Jund. Endurance is the green version of the pitch one that exiles graveyards. You have Gaia's Will, which is Yawgmoth's Will, but in green with suspend. And you have Chatterfang, who is the legendary Squirrel General that goes infinite with a few different combos and makes 1/1 tokens off of tokens. I think it is here a little bit more as a concert to Commander. So Noble Hierarch, currently the favor, right? This is another card that's in contention for best card in the set. We've talked a lot about this card already. Just having four extra Noble Hierarchs that are also just, so you can play eight of those or play Jund or whatever, is really strong. Endurance is a little bit of a dark horse. I think people are underestimating how good a flash 3/4 reach for three is. That is also one of the best graveyard hate spells in the format. Like, this is like kind of a great little beater that's really gonna like just sometimes ruin a Dredge player's day.
And I can't believe that card is, I can't believe they printed a 3/4 flash for three that does this, because I actually think, I mean, I think they were trying to, similar to the Titans, I think they were trying to figure out a way to make all five of these kind of special. Like, I think they knew these were going to be the card, you know, everyone's going to talk about these cards, but like, they could have made this a 2/2. I think I said this on our review show. If this was a 3-mana 2/2 that did the exact same thing, it would have a 2/2 reach that does the same exact thing, even like a 2/3, it would have been totally fine. A 3/4 reach flash for three is already good enough that you could just be playing like a blue green deck, just like a blue green tempo deck with this card in as a card. And like, it's good enough. You don't need to sandbag this. So like, I think, you know, this card is pretty nuts. I don't think Gaia's Will is the top here. I am really impressed with Gaia's Will. I think it's a very cool card, especially considering you can suspend this. And like, when you want to use a card like Yawgmoth, it's usually a few turns into the game anyway. Some other things have to happen. So actually this card being a suspend card is fine. Like, it's not the same as some of the other.
Well, it like sets cards. You up for the turn you're going to win, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I think it's fine. I actually think it's very powerful. But I don't think Chatterfang for me in Modern feels, it's a combo card for sure. Like, I definitely understand that it's going to slot into a creature combo deck, but I think the creature combos are good enough. We don't need this.
Yeah, I think it doesn't win you the game. It just like wipes the board too. I think that like, as a commander, it's very cool. Gaia's Will to me is the one that I'm a little bit more interested in. Just the fact that it like, Underworld Breach has seen so much play, and this card does very similar things in colors that maybe don't need red. Now, like, red is the best color for that, but also getting to play both is just on its own something that's really interesting. But yeah, I think there's definitely some cool stuff. But yeah, I think it's between one of the other ones. But yes, really, really strong category.
Yep. But before you move on, I think we just have to admit, like, Noble Hierarch is one of the most powerful cards of all time. It's one of the best, most consistently good cards ever.
Regular Noble Hierarch,
Noble Hierarch. And it's not in the best color combination in terms of the colors that it produces. It's so good, in fact, there are many decks that play this off color just to get you green and something, or sometimes it's more just common green.
Yeah, it's more common a blue green card than a banned one, or a green white one, or a In fact,
so the idea that like you are now getting the same card, but in Magic, in Modern's most consistent three color deck ever, that like famously was so good with Deathrite Shaman that it got Deathrite Shaman banned.
But yeah,
like, it makes me think like how much? Okay, here's a question for you. In Modern, how much worse is Ignoble Hierarch than Deathrite Shaman? That's the question I want to ask before we move on.
Worse.
How much worse? I mean, definitely worse. But I'm saying like
30% worse.
If Hierarch's a 10, or sorry, if Shaman's a 10, where is Ignoble?
30% worse.
The 7. Okay.
Yeah, I'm fine with saying that. Deathrite Shaman is one of the best creatures, best cards ever printed. Right? Like its ability to also splash into any color is not to be like the reason Jund was still a problem after Bloodbraid Elf got banned was because it was able to splash white and play a Johnny's Vengeance or whatever other card it ever wanted to play. So I think like five colors versus three colors on a body that is a threat is still better. Plus it's a hate card, plus all the other things that we don't have to go into Deathrite Shaman. That being said, there has never been a good Bant deck in Modern.
Yeah, ever. I've certainly tried.
I can't think of one. And maybe there is, and someone's gonna tweet at me being like, oh, what about this one? Fine. But there are a lot of good Jund decks and Ignoble Hierarch sides right into that. All right. Best blue card. We got Counterspell, Suspend, Sivvy Illyn of Sea and Sky. I hate you. Worst card just from the impossibility of pronouncing it. And then Murktide Regent. Those are the four blue cards. First, we got Counterspell. I don't know what else more to say. We had when it was first previewed as one of the first cards shown, we had a whole conversation about it. Obviously, Magic defining card. I argued. I think it's the most defining blue card of all time.
This is the front runner for like in the set of like we're gonna get to best cards, but like this is a hard one to start a category with because it's one of Magic's most iconic cards ever, mm-hmm. and it's been a card that has been restricted from reprints into Modern for years because people have felt like it's so good. So, like, we don't really need to talk about how good Counterspell is. I feel like the only conversation is, like, what's the best art? And, like, I know you have a dope 7th edition foil. Don't you have the 7th edition foil Counterspell? Did I make that up?
No, I have that. I have a foil 7th edition signed by Richard Garfield. I think I have a foil Japanese and foil American Mystic Archive foils as well, and I have the foil Jace's book thing. I have like when I get to play four Counterspells in Modern, I'm going to have four different printings, and they're all going to be dope AF, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, that's like super sweet. So figuring I feel out like that
fourth one's the hard part.
That conversation, as far as like what is the best Counterspell, fine. I think it's the best blue card. Like we can talk about the other three a little bit more like fervently. Murktide Regent's an interesting card. You and I talked about this before the show. So Murktide Regent is blue 5 for a 3/3 dragon with delve, flying. When it enters the battlefield, it gets a +1/+1 counter on it for each instant and sorcery card exiled with it. And whenever an instant or sorcery card leaves your graveyard, put a +1/+1 counter on Murktide Regent. So I think I wrongly called this like a Hogak level power card before the show. Mm-hmm. It's not that it's a Hogak level card. It's that it's just, let's just pretend you do any kind of like cantrip, self mill, anything at all in the first couple turns of the game. This is going to be like a 2-mana 5/5 or a 2-mana 6/6 flyer that gets better as the game goes on. And it costs you very little to do it. That like, I mean, I know Hogak was part of a combo engine, which is what made Hogak Hogak, but like, this is so good.
Yeah, I think this card to me is more comparable to Tassiger or Gurmag Angler, right? Like delve beaters that are efficient, and you play decks that benefit by putting a bunch of cards in your graveyard and you delve them away, like that delve style play gameplay. Or even more in like an interesting way is the decks that were already kind of doing that for Logic Knot that now have Counterspell to play instead, so you can play this instead of the Logic Knot to eat your graveyard as like a version of that. people, you're not the only one. People are like, oh man, this is Hogak again. And like, the reason Hogak was good was it's like interaction with sack outlets that milled yourself. But I forget what it's called. The artifact.
Altar of Dementia.
And casting cards from your graveyard. Like the ability to cast from your graveyard plus Altar of Dementia created this like specific type of combo engine that was just so degenerate that you just like won the game. And it was an 8-8 beater, right? This is just a 8-8 beater that flies, which is still really good. It's just like Hogak. The problems with Hogak were not that it was an 8-8 for two.
It's almost like there's three categories of cards. There's fair magic, there's pushed fair magic, and then there's like incidentally unfair magic. And like Hogak is in the category of incidentally unfair because the way that it combined with other cards made it such that just the delve ability wasn't the problem. It was the fact that it, with something else, created this toxic thing that kind of just ruined the format because like it was just going to be faster than you and it was going to get the job done. Mm-hmm. This is pushed fair, so it's still like you're just removing cards from your graveyard that you have to get there somehow to make a big creature. Doesn't enter the battlefield and say like your opponent sacrificed two lands. Like it's just a really good beater. It doesn't do anything else. If they path it, you just get a land, right? That's right. What happens. You spent all this time and network and energy, like that's what this card is. And so I think to that end it's not quite the same level, but I think to the end of like blue getting a like big time upgrade, I think the fact that this flies is something that really stands out to me when you talk about Tasigur and you talk about Angler. Like,
yeah, but it's also double blue, which is a cost of that, right? That's like what you're paying above Angler. Is like Angler is a 1-drop 5/5. This is a 2-drop 5/5, maybe 6/6. Let's say perfectly it's an 8/8, like perfect world it's an 8/8. That's so hard to pull off too. Yeah, I don't know.
Really quickly before we move on, I just want to say I'm imagining a deck that plays 4 Hedron Crab, 4 Ruin Crab. No, probably not even 4 Ruin Crab, actually. Just Hedron, because I want to be able to control it. 4 Hedron Crab, 4 Jace's Phantasm, 4 of this card, and then a whole bunch of cantrips. And I want to be able to just like play fetch lands and mill myself to be able to make this card the best it possibly can be, but then just have Hedron Crabs in my deck where I'm like, oh yeah, like I have this 1-mana 1/1 that I just drew a fetch land, and oh, you have 4 cards in your graveyard. Okay, I'll just play this fetch land and mill you both times, and then I'll have a 5/5 flat. That was just it's in my deck. Like, that's what I want to do with this. I want to be able to do it both ways. That's and it fair. Seems like just a beater. And like I'm playing Force of Negation, and I'm playing like all of the blue things that are sweet. I even probably play the new Incarnation so I can bounce things out of the way.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. Next card is Suspend. This is one that's already seeing a ton of play. This card is being compared to as the blue Swords of Plowshare. I do actually think it has that ability. It's an interesting space. Someone asked if I think it's better than Path to Exile in Modern. And I think that, A, it's an Inquisition to Kozilek Thoughtseize kind of situation where you can play both. There's nothing that stops you from playing both cards. And they have different uses. I do think that if your deck is trying to win by turn 4, Suspend is better. I think that if your deck is trying to win after turn 4 or is trying to stop your opponent from winning to get to a later point of the game or just stop your opponent from winning in general to win your game later, Path is better, right? Because it gets you to that late game a little bit stronger. I do think you want both. And there are cooler things to do with Suspend, right? Because there's like that's just base level using this removal spell. Then add the fact that like Suspend late game can let you like rebuy a Snapcaster Mage for value if there's a blocker and you just want to use it to like rebuy a cantrip in a few turns. It can be used with Teferi to lock your opponent's creatures out, right? Like once they come back, if Teferi's in play, 3-mana Teferi, they no longer get to play the card. And it just has this ability to be a really versatile removal spell with some value engine capabilities plus combo with other cards.
Yeah, I mean, this card, I mentioned it on the last show, and I think I actually said Suspend when I was talking about the card delay, which is funny. I corrected myself, but the card is just called Suspend.
Yes.
But it is in the family of what we always talk about with Pongify and Rapid Hybridization. It's just, it doesn't give them a 3/3 and it exiles. And so it's just very, 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 very efficient. I do think that there's a thing that happens where you're playing against somebody and you go, okay, I have this removal spell in my hand and I'm going to use it at the opportune time. And it's going to turn the game so that I can open up the pathway for me to win. And I think the fact that the card comes back means that you have to play this at a time where you're going to be able to win the game in short order. Like, you have to be able to know that your deck does a thing or has a game plan, because otherwise you're going to be forced to use this before you have that plan set up. And by the time your plan's going, they're just going to get their creature back. And then you just kind of lost a card to, like, delay the game a little bit.
Well, except that sometimes creatures are really good on turn 2, 3, and 4, but terrible turn 5, 6, and 7, right? Like, Ignoble Hierarch being a good example of that. Or even just, like, the Murktide Regent or a Delve, like Murktide Regent, where you no longer get the cool trigger because it's no longer exiling anything when it enters play. There's, like, things you can do with it that, like, people build on that lets you get rid of stuff. There's also, like, the fact that not Arcbound Ravager, XX for do damage for
Walking Ballista.
Walking Ballista. The fact that Walking Ballista combo is one of the most powerful combos in the format, suspend allowing you to kill Walking Ballista if they ever put in the play at instant speed without them being able to kind of, if they don't have the combat immediately. Like, there's, like, versatile things about it. I think it's just a good removal spell, right? I think, like delay was already playable, and this is, I think, like, this is a, like, it, we've always talked that there's, like, the top played one drops, and blue's always been, like, a Serum Visions effect. I think suspend could be its removal spell in that spot where, like, green now has the, like, you draw a card and you have protection from black or blue spells. You get Fatal Push. Blue now has suspend, and obviously Lightning Bolt. So I think that's really cool.
I do think it's interesting that it's a rare. I think that's, like, kind of a funky printing, but, like, yeah, I mean, whatever. I think the card's awesome. I think it's really, really good.
Mm-hmm. And then the last blue card is the Merfolk God. Obviously a powerful commander, great in Merfolk. We talked a lot about it last week. The ability to protect your Merfolk while also drawing you a bunch of cards is just, like, very strong. That deck has gotten a lot of new tools, and this is definitely an engine card that goes on top of it. It also just being a 3/4 indestructible is just going to be a thing you have to deal with, and is going to be really powerful.
I think we compared this last week already to Coppola, and it's like, that's like the difference between, like, a standard legend and, like, a Horizons 2 legend is that, like, this is just a busted card in the deck, whereas the other one's, like, a very good card.
Yep.
It's just, yeah, this is just really good. It's not as good as the other blue cards, but
right,
it's very good.
Right. Next is best white card. Esper Sentinel, Prismatic Ending, Solitude, and Karmic Guide are our four nominees. Esper Sentinel is the one mana 1/1 that artifact creature that you the first spell of every player's turn they have to pay X, where X is its power, and if they don't, you draw a card. So it's kind of like it lives in the world of Rhystic Study. It's people referring to them as Rhystic Buddy, but one mana in white. You have Prismatic Ending, which is the X white removal spell that people that was actually better. I think at one point it was an instant that they had to downgrade in the release notes, but it is just really efficient. X white exile a creature equal to how much mana you spent on it. Of different colors, I believe, right? It's the let me find the exact. Yeah, it's Converge, exile target and online permanent if mana value is less than or equal to the number of colors of mana spent to cast the spell. Another efficient removal spell. You have Solitude, which is the white incarnation, gets a which I think is maybe my favorite card of these, and then you have Karmic Guide, which is one of my favorite reprints in the set. White, I think, actually got a lot more power than this. Like, it was a much flatter one, because you have everything from Soul Snare to Abiding Grace to so, like, there's just, like, a lot of power level for this color in the set, which is good because white needs it. Healer's Flock, which is not that, but that's the white 3 flying lifelink version of that bird.
I'm surprised that you just mentioned it a second ago, but I'm surprised you weren't more hyped on Soul Snare. I feel like that card's totally, don't you love that card?
When it was printed, it was very hyped. Yeah. We don't get to choose this. There's a whole nomination process. Soul Snare wasn't nominated.
We can't change the Academy.
Just I am just a presenter. All right. People send me envelopes with information on it. Of these cards,
like the one. Yeah, I feel like it's so clearly Solitude. Like this is another one of those situations where it's like there's a card they printed that was just like, oh, a jaw drop on the floor. Like this will be played forever as one of the best white cards ever printed. I think there are some good cards. I really like Esper Sentinel. I think specifically for Modern, as humans, is a deck that consistently ebbs and flows in terms of popularity. I think this is such a good human. Like it's such a good human. But I do think that when you're just talking about what decks in Modern like need to push them over the top, it's free things, and getting a free exile removal spell is so good. So like it's busted.
right. And I think I think like Karmic Guide has a big chance of being a very powerful card. It's a part of a pretty wide strategy of powerful things. Prismatic Ending is like the kind of one of the most efficient removal spells ever printed. It was nerfed to be a sorcery in design, so I'm interested to see if it does see its same amount of play, but it will always be one of the really, like, really powerful options for white. And then I do think Esper Sentinel, like, even outside of Modern, like, will see more play than I think maybe the other four of these cards. Like, this is that is a card that will be a commander staple forever, and because of that, you're just going to see it a lot more often. It's going to be one that, like, if like, it could be just more popular just from that fact alone. So it'll be an interesting battle. Now best artifact, we got four options. Number one is Academy Manufacturer. Number two is Caldra Complete. Number three is Sword of Hearth and Home, and number four is Underworld Cookbook.
The cookbook we talked about a little bit already. It's the discard outlet that goes along with Trans of and obviously,
way too many letters. Never gonna try. People are making like jokes, like people will try and pronounce this word correctly before other ones, and I have zero plans on ever pronouncing that word correctly.
If you tried your best right now to do it off of memory, what would it sound like?
I'll just try reading it off the memory. After reading, I know I don't even know. Reading it as Moran Nomar Dekai Destin Kul Dekar.
Sounds great to me.
First on this list is Academy Manufacturer. This is the 3 mana 1/3. If you would create a clue, food, or treasure token, instead create one of each. So just multiplying those cards. This is already seeing like play in Modern. Just the ability, like artifact token creators have already shown their power level in pretty much every format, and the ability to have a creature that triples that number, right? It's not just you get one clue, it's you get a clue, food, and a treasure token, and then those interact with each other really well. So it's like almost a lord for those cards, where then like cards that were balanced with clues, for instance, which are harder to make, now get the trigger off of you making food tokens with Goose and et cetera, et cetera. So I think it just like has the potential to break things in a way that's really interesting. What are your thoughts on Academy Manufacturer?
I mean, I think like the fact that it costs 3 and is just a creature, and like then after that it costs 3, you double up on your things. It seems good. It just seems like very like a cute piece in a deck that I think is cool, but it doesn't seem like it's quite on the level of, I think, some of the other cards that I'm seeing from the set. I think the one card we didn't mention that I'm surprised actually didn't make the list was the Soul Talisman. I'm surprised that people didn't get more hyped on Suspend Soul Ring, but I think if we're going to talk about cards that are on here, the sword of Hearth and Home, and you called
it. Trying to nominate cards after the fact.
I was shocked, but I was gonna say Sword of Hearth and Home, you called it when we were talking about a set that they only did one, they're saving the other one. So
we have blue, black, and green, red to not have been printed.
Okay, this one is so like wheelhouse of cards that have already existed, right? Because it's just a combination of, what is it, Sword of the Animist and just a blink thing. Okay, is there
I don't think there's a blink sword. Yeah. I mean, it has the Sword of the Animist text. It does come into play untapped, which is not insignificant. I think this is the best of the new swords. I think they maybe even saw the response to the last two. I think part of that is also that just like swords are worse in Modern than they used to be. They still see some play, like sort of like Feast of Famine and Fire and Ice still see play. The blue white one and the red black one didn't really see much play in Modern, and so I think this is them trying to hit that a little bit harder. And part of it is also protection. Like, I think they do balance with protection of mine. Blue white is a strategy that having protection from is significant. Red black is a pretty significant color combo to have protection from. Green white is as well, but it not the best removal spells.
Just protects you from path, basically, and now solitude.
Yeah, protects you from some from decent removal spells and gets around green blockers, so it's not irrelevant. So I do think this is cool, and obviously blinking and getting lands are really powerful. I think the big one here, the big two are the next two, though. I think Caldra Complete is already seeing a ton of plays, already one of the more expensive cards in the set. The fact that it's a Snapcaster Mage, not Snapcaster Mage, sorry, the fact that a Stoneforge Mystic can sneak Caldra into play is super scary.
7 mana, legendary artifact equipment. It's a living weapon, indestructible, and then it's +5/+5. First strike, trample, indestructible, haste, and whenever it deals combat damage to a creature, just exile that creature. Like, I mean, obviously at 7, I can't just go as far as say this is just better than Batterskull. It's like, it costs 7. If you don't have a way to cheat it into play, it costs 7. Mm-hmm. Like, 5 is a lot more manageable, but like, if you're going to cheat one of them into play, this is such a beating. Like, it's so good.
Yeah, and as decks I've seen so far, I've been running both. And I think the difference between the two is that Batterskull is a much harder to destroy threat in control decks, because you're able to bounce it to your hand at instant speed. At 5 mana, it's more castable. But Caldra is also just, if they don't have Path to Exile, this card is so hard to fight against. Now, Suspend is good against it, right? Suspend is able to exile the token forever, basically, but getting it into play with the Stoneforge Mystic is just, like, such a beating that, like, it's already seeing good play. And so I think it's, like, it's pretty powerful. It's just, like, a really big threat. Not to mention, like, Tron is already looking at it as well. Because you can play it and then also equip it to things if your token dies for whatever reason with the Tron mana you have.
7. It's so classic Tron.
Yep. And then the last deck card, which I think people were underrating at first when they first saw it, was the Underworld Cookbook. And that is 1 mana, tap it to discard a card, create a food token, or 4 mana, tap it, sacrifice it to return target creature from your graveyard to your hand. Now, this is also tutorable with Azmoran, Mordecai, whatever.
Excellent.
Kaldekar. But basically, we've already seen, like, the ability with Witch's Oven that like, tap, cost, make a food token is just, like, weirdly very good. And I would argue sacrificing a creature is worse by a wide margin than discarding a card. And it is still very good. Sacrificing creature tap is a very good ability. Tapping to discard a card when this lets you cast your Azmoran and Mordecai, it lets you cast your the frilled Rootwalla. It lets you, there's so many different things you can do with the discard outlet that I will talk about forever, if you allow me. Lingering Souls, flashback cards. We can keep going. But that's good enough on its own. And then it has the value of being able to buy stuff late game if you eventually, like, your hand is, you've ran out of cards in your hand and you need something to do. This lets you rebuy a creature back from your graveyard to play it.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything you're saying there when it comes to that stuff is powerful. I mean, I've never been as big of a fan of that type of deck as you have, so I'll never expound on it quite as much, but if you're going to talk about the different artifacts, the one that gets me the most excited, it's probably the Caldra. That's probably the one. When I think about the stuff that I like doing, I've always loved playing a turn 2 Stoneforge Mystic. Like, if they don't have an answer, just, like, having Batterskull is great. Just even better. So it is interesting that the thing that gets rid of Batterskull's token, right? The Path of Exile.
Yep.
Path of Suspend. Does the same thing against this, which is smart that it's designed the same way that you can still exile. The indestructible doesn't matter.
Yep.
But it is notable that Fatal Push could get rid of the token. It cannot get rid of this.
It can't. Oh yeah. On Batterskull. But Batterskull can rebuy itself. That's, like, the difference,
correct,
right?
Correct.
All right. So the way, because we are running a little low on time, the way I actually want to do this, we're going to do a best gold card, best land. We're going to discuss them the same way. And then I'm going to read through all of the other announcements, but we are not going to discuss every single card on them. So we're just going to have to just one word comments. I'm like, yes, that's great. All right, best gold card. First one is
so good at being efficient on time.
That's like, I'm gonna barrel through it. Azmoran Mordecai, the car is number one. Grist, Shardless Agent, Scythus, and Dakon Shadow Slayer. So Gris is the Planeswalker. So this is the one that like broke the rules of Magic, right? So it is a, as long as Gris the Tidehunger isn't on the battlefield, it's a 1/1 insect green creature addition to its other type. So everywhere else, you can tutor for it. If it's in your graveyard, it's a creature. You can reanimate it. If you have something that reveals a creature on the top of your library, it's a creature. You can plus it to create a 1/1 black, green, and insect creature token, then mill a card. If an insect creature was milled this way, put a loyalty counter on Grift and repeat this process. So this is a 3-mana planeswalker with a plus that protects itself. So you plus one to get an insect mill and you can repeat that process so it can go really quickly. You minus two, you may sacrifice a creature when you do destroy target creature or planeswalker. So it has, you know, pseudo vindicant on the bottom. And then minus five, each opponent loses life equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard. I think this card is already seeing play in Jund-like decks. The fact that it's a 3-mana planeswalker that pluses to generate value, that's normally what they're not allowed to do, right? That's the 3-mana planeswalker limit. Without all of the other shenanigans, the fact that it's a creature, meaning that you can tutor for it, you can birthing pod for it, not in modern, but in other formats, like they're all the real cute things you can do with it. Then the fact that it can be a commander, like this card has the potential to just be like an all-time great. Plus the alt art version is like gorgeous. I think this card is... like, I know you mentioned you didn't really take a quick look at it, but like it weirdly breaks anything that breaks the game of Magic, right? This like breaks the rules. It's a creature when it's not a planeswalker, and then add the fact that it's a 3-mana planeswalker that has a plus that creates creatures.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely powerful. I guess it feels like the ability is sort of just a little bit marginal, like the actual things the card is doing. It's like making a 1/1, and if you mill it, I guess if you are playing a dedicated insect deck, like that's cool. I guess a plus one.
Well, remember, it counts itself. So if it mills itself a second copy,
yeah,
you get the 1/1.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And like obviously, you sack a creature. The fact that you can destroy a planeswalker with the minus, I think, is especially good. That does stand out to me, right? Like that's really cool.
You remember that, like, 2 years ago, a modern playable planeswalker at 4 mana, just like best ability, was making a 1/1 every turn with like Elsbeth, right? I guess it was 3 years ago now, but like there was a time where Elsbeth was like a top 5 planeswalker in modern, and this does that ability at 3 mana. The jump ability it loses, but like arguably killing a thing is sometimes better than +3/+3.
Yeah, no, I think it's totally fair. I also think that like my estimation of Oko when it was printed was garbage. So like I'm not gonna stand here and be like, oh, I know what's up with 3-mana planeswalker.
I don't think it's the best card on this list necessarily. Just like I think it's very powerful. The next card we're gonna talk about is Azmaran, and I'm never gonna say her name correctly. Legendary creature, human wizard, 3/3. That's its big thing, is the fact that if you discard a card, you may then play this card that turn for red and white, red and black, and you get a 1-mana 3/3 out of it that then tutors for a card that lets you discard cards to make food tokens, and then can use food tokens to deal 6 damage to have a creature deal 6 damage to itself. So like a cool removal effect. This is already seeing play in cool Vengevine lists alongside her cookbook. She does really, really powerful thing. She's a free card. There's already ways people have talked about cheating her into play, like including like Aether Vialing her into play, because you can just Aether Vial her for like on you can zero. Do it on turn, yeah. Not for zero, which is sweet. So she's just like this very cool card that like is like doing cool stuff and is powerful and has an advantage engine attached to it and is a beater.
And has an impossible name to pronounce. And that's like one of the biggest jokes in the set.
And the fact that you can like do some shenanigans to get some Vengevines into your deck, into your graveyard. And then on turn two, if not theoretically, if you can get a bunch of Vengevines into your deck on turn one, on that same turn, if we lived in the world of Faithless Looting, and Simeon Spirit Guide still being legal, you could Faithless Looting, discarding two drawing two cards, discarding Vengevine and Blazing Root Walla, play the Blazing Root Walla, and then use Simeon Spirit Guide to play Azmaran and Mordekai Kaidakar, right? Like that was a thing that was possible. Now you just have to do that on turn two. You play the cookbook. On turn two, you tap the cookbook, discard Root Walla, play Azmaran Monicus, and then you get the Vengevine you discarded on turn one.
Monicus.
So like, and now you have a 4/3, the Root Walla, and a 3/3 in play on turn two, and food tokens and all this other stuff, and you're that far ahead. And that's not to count all of the other cool stuff you can do. I think this card's really cool. Third card is the card That's a pretty known quantity, and that's Shardless Agent.
This card is interesting to me because in the printing of Shardless Agent plus other cards, like, we have now been introduced to more suspend cards and also more cards that take advantage of suspend. So I think this is probably actually one of the most balanced cards, like it being a 2/2 for three that is accomplishing the same thing that other three mana cascade cards do already in Modern is great. Like, it's nice that you can get a creature out of this instead of just like a really crappy Demonic Dread or something. But I also think, like, we didn't even put the red card, the 3/1 for two, on our list, right? Like, there's other stuff that's like plays in the same space. So I actually kind of think that this card is exactly balanced for the power level of Modern at this point.
Yeah,
I don't even think it's like busted. I think it's just like kind of normal.
I think it's not actually taking advantage of it, right? Like, the fact that Bloodbraid Elf is still a top tier playable card in Modern, not maybe where it was at one point, but still in the top cards. This, like, people are already playing with cascade decks. We were playing with both, just trying to get the value. There's already be a reinvigoration towards the Living End decks, because like having a 2/2/3 mana creature that lets you cascade into Living End is much better than having to like play a bunch of instants and sorceries that actually don't do anything to get to Living End, because this lets you block if there's a fail case or whatever. And just like, it's also just like the same reason Bloodbraid Elf is good in Jund, right? Like, Bloodbraid Elf in Jund is not trying to get you cheat something insane in the play. It's just trying to get you another card that's powerful. And so for four mana, you're getting normally seven mana worth of cards. And this does the same thing for two mana, right? Like, cascading this into a Ren and Six is good. Like, the fact that you can play like a Rug Bloodbraid Elf that cascades into this, that cascades into Ren and Six, is like just going to put you so far ahead on board in a really fun way. And doesn't even get into the Ancestral Visions shenanigans that you can do, or like some of the new cards, like from Profane Tutor to the red version of that like lets you Warp World your side of the board and cheat Emrakul's in the play, which is an option with this card now. And it's an artifact creature, which is not irrelevant for Delirium, right? That's like the other thing is, and there are good Jund Delirium cards. So that's another piece to that. The next card is Scythus. This is the two mana Enchantress. Enchantress definitely got a lot of really powerful cards. The Seth set, green and a white, 1/2. Whenever you cast an enchantment spell, you gain one life and draw a card. Like, the gaining a life is extra. I think people would be really hyped for this card at one and a green if it just drew cards, right? I mean, like, it also stabilizes.
This compares to green 1/0/1 Argothian Enchantress that has Shroud, and whenever you cast an enchantment spell, you draw cards. So like, that's the space we're playing in, is that, you know, two mana, like, best green Enchantress of all time. You gain a life. It doesn't have Shroud. It doesn't cost three, though. And it also isn't a 0/1. So like, it's not as good as Argothian Enchantress, I guess, probably, because like the protected thing is pretty powerful, but it's not mana, much worse. But it's
two mana is a big game, like, costing only two mana.
But Argothian costs two.
Oh, sure. Sorry. Okay.
Argothian's the older.
I was thinking of Enchantress Presence, which is also in this set, which is the two green enchantment that has does the Enchantress thing. But
this is the second best Enchantress ever printed, is what it is. It's not as good as the classic Legacy version, because that version has protection, but it's better than every other one. Verdurin Enchantress is a joke compared to this.
Right. And then you add that they got other Enchantress cards into the format, I think also bumped the power level, because you have stuff, you have like the Sarah's Sanctum on a creature that's like really good, and you have, that's also an enchantment creature, so it triggers this when it comes into play. You have Enchantress Presence, which is an enchantment that does it, and then you have all the other enchantment stuff that was printed in Theros Beyond Death that already made it close, right? There's the 3-mana one that gets a +1/+1 counter for every enchantment you play that would just be playable in that deck, because it's like a threat and a creature. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see what these Enchantress decks do. And then the last card is Dakon. Face of the set, white, blue, black, zero loyalty planeswalker Dakon. It enters the battlefield with the number of loyalty counters on him equal to the number of lands you control. +1 surveil, 2, -3 exile target creature, -6 you may put an artifact card from your hand or graveyard onto the battlefield. This card's dope.
I find this card so interesting because it's like really cool, but also really exactly at the level of power that I think I kind of expect a Planeswalker in this set to be. It's sort of pushed exactly in the way that I think I would hope they would push a card. Because I don't look at this and go, there's no concern that this is going to be unfair. My exact expectation is this card is going to be really sweet and people will play it. It won't make a huge impact. This will not be as good as Renin 6, but it will be better than most Planeswalkers. It will have a place. It'll have a real place, and it's a very cool card that scales nicely to late game, which I think is great.
The fact that in Esper decks, its worst case scenario is Esper Charm, in the sense that like it's 3 mana, destroy, exile target creature.
Right.
Worst case scenario, it's 3 mana, exile target creature. That card would have seen play in this format, especially because it's 3 mana exile target creature, put a Planeswalker into your graveyard that like you can get back with Sun Titan later, or like if you're playing that like a graveyard Delirium strategy, or it adds a Delirium or makes your Tarmogoyf, whatever. The fact that it also then plus 2s a Surveil, which plays into that graveyard shenanigan deck where like you do maybe are playing this as a reanimate companion, it coming down, then you Surveil to allowing you to play kind of like maybe a Solar Flare Sun Titan deck again, which I think would be really cool. And then at minus 6, and Surveil 2 as a plus is also just insane, right? Like it protects itself if you need to. And then Surveil 2 is like it is better than Scry 2 because you mill stuff. And then minus 6, you may put an artifact card from your graveyard, from your hand or graveyard onto the battlefield. That's because it can just on turn 6, if you cast this, it just gets to do that. You don't have to get to 6 loyalty. You just have to have 6 land in play. And so being able to play that, like the fact that this is in a artifact reanimator strategy deck, which there are good things, and there are other cards printed that play into that space, like Persist, and then you have a Marquee that can put them into your graveyard as well. But the fact that this and Persist can act as your two like black, white, blue artifact reanimator, get ink with the Leviathan and then protect it control decks is like really cool. And I think has a home for him in the world of this set. Yeah, so those are our 5 best gold cards. I'm actually interested to see who wins this, because I think this is a flatter power level scale.
I agree. There's not like a clear best.
Yeah, I think it might be as more random mod guy just because the memes, and she is seeing a lot of play already out the gate. But it could be Charlotte's Agent, right? Like it could be Scythus. Grist right. also is like really popular, so it'll be close. All right, so the last one we're going to discuss today, and then I'll just go through all of them, and Ben will listen and go and clap when he's excited. Is going to be best lands that are not fetch lands or basics. We know that fetch lands are the best. Well, fetch lands might not be the best lands, but it would be unfun to include them. First, we have Urza's Saga, which is another contender for best card in the set, already being talked about as needing to be banned ASAP. Field of the Dead level of play or more. One of the first cards printed. We've talked about this a lot, but
previewed early.
Super scary, like already being talked about getting banned. Cabal Coffers, Commander staple, one of the best black land producing mana lands of all time. You know, has the ability with Urborg to create really cool decks that do fun things. Yavimaya, Cradle of Growth, the green Urborg. I did see a funny thing of basically like, there's a reason that the blue one, the red one, and the white one will never be printed.
It was Aaron Forsythe was tweeting about it, and he was saying it's Boil, Flash Fires, maybe.
Maybe, yeah, destroy. It's the red spell that destroys all islands, I think, is flat.
That's Boil.
That's Boil.
I think Flash Fires is destroy all planes.
Yes. Yeah.
Is the two red ones.
And then Malakut was for mountains.
Yeah.
Yep. So, exactly. But green one, this is the card that everyone was complaining. Why does green get all, like this in Yagamasu is like green got 2 of the best black cards ever printed in green for some reason. And then Riptide Laboratory is number 4, which just allows you to bounce wizards to your hands, lock people out with Venser, is like a free roll in a lot of decks to rebuy your Snapcaster mages. And I think it's actually probably being a little undervalued. I mean, it did make it here. There weren't a lot of options to make it into the best lands, but Riptide Laboratory made it to the top 4.
I feel like of this group, it's pretty clearly Urza's Saga is the one that is the most powerful because it's just a freaking land that's going to get you something into play on turn 3 and like
ramps you good. And tutors. Like, yep. Already breaking the format.
Yeah, it's like really busted. It was a splashy card. So it's cool. It's a cool card that it's a land that does a saga. I think that the green Urborg is totally cool. I don't think it's like busted by any means. I think it's just as good as the black one.
I think there's like cool things you can do with it that like maybe is like busted in the long run. I just don't. Yeah, it seems like a lot safer than even Urborg is.
It just seems cool to me. I love Laboratory. It's always been one of my favorite lands. I think it's such a sweet card. Like, it interacts favorably with so many cool things, from these mentioned Spencer to Snapcaster to like Spellstutter Sprite. Like, there's just so many cool things that it does.
Like making a fairies deck work. Honestly, one of the reasons I don't like Subtlety as much is partially because of Riptide Laboratory. And like, I'd rather play Venser. Like, I don't want to go. We don't want to rant on the last one, where I don't like Subtlety and it didn't make it into any of our nominations. So I think people are starting to agree with us. But just like, if you're talking about a 4-mana flash creature that counters a spell, I'd rather play Venser. If you're talking about the free half, I think there's a lot of other issues with Subtlety. But Riptide Laboratory being able to bounce both Spellstutter Sprite and Venser is like a really big game to me that I think is really powerful.
Yeah, fair.
All right, now. That's it. That's all the cards we're discussing tonight. We are going to list all of the other categories. You can also look all of this below. Please vote. And make sure to save your votes to see if you predicted correctly who won. And we will be giving away prizes that will be announced during the show to the person who submits their who had the closest to the winners of everyone. I believe
the only thing we missed was to talk about Cabal Coffers. I don't think we mentioned it.
We talked about it before, really, but yes,
it's really good. I mean, it's a classically powerful card. I don't have that much to say about it. We didn't want anybody listening to like not
Mono Black Tron like is a thing that's been talked about. The fact that this lets you do that and with again some hate cards a little bit more easily. Or just play better cards than random artifact spells. I think it's like really powerful. And like we'll see some amount of play. So the next category. So best new to modern reprint. The options are Counterspell, Goblin Bombardment, Shardless Agent, Titania, and Vindicate. Of those, we discussed three of them. Titania offering land strategies, and Vindicate being one of the best removal spells of all time. Now any thoughts, Ben? And what's your favorite without talking about them?
I love Vindicate. I love that card. Titania is really great. It's a cool finisher card. I think none of those, the ones we talked about, will be the ones that'll win. Sure. I think Vindicate's awesome, but it's not going to be that good.
I was surprised Vindicate wasn't nominated for Big Gold. Kind of a snub in Best Gold card, if you ask me.
It's just faded. It's just faded is all.
Best new card, Grief, Urza Saga, Ennoble Hierarch, Dam, or Dwathi Voidwalker. For me,
talk about all of those cards.
Yeah, we talked about all those cards. I think we don't have to predict here. I don't want to tame people too much. Funniest card, Dermotaxi, Asmirana, Mordecai, Chitter Spitter, Late to Dinner, and Ennoble Hierarch. I think the jokes speak for themselves. I'm excited to see who people vote for. Best flavor reference. So this is a reference to the story. We have Captured by Legax, Asmirana Maedhros. She's the Titanic of this nomination process. Just every category sweeping. She's gonna sweep the Academy. Garth One Eye, Ignoble Hierarch. Best common, Bone Shards, Goblin Anarchomancer, Abundant Harvest, and Chatterstorm. This is also a throwback to all of our Popper fans in the audience. And
Chatterstorm will get banned. Yep.
Chatterstorm could be banned. No, that's the best common.
In Popper, for sure, it'll get banned.
Best common. We'll talk about most likely to get banned in a second. Best legendary creature, Grist, which is, you know, cheating his way in there. Asmirana, Mordecai, to Kaldekar, Lothis, Chatterfang, Garth One Eye, and Ragavan. Best card for the 99 in EDH, Dwathi Voidwalker, Sword of Hearthenholm, Solitude, and Dam. We actually had to consolidate the CDH category and the regular category. So that's how you got those four. Most likely to get banned, we have Grief, Urza's Saga, Dwathi Voidwalker, and Chatterstorm. You mentioned Chatterstorm, Ben, and here it is, and most likely to get banned. That would probably be in Popper. This is, I believe, is meant for all formats, though the other three are definitely leaning into Legacy or Modern, I think. And then, last but not least, the nominations for Best Card in Modern Horizons 2. Let me just open this envelope.
We're doing that next week.
I need to print out envelopes for all these. Best Cards options are Grief, Asmirana, Namor, Dekai, Dakar, Distan, Dakaldakar, Urza's Saga, Ignoble Hierarch, Dwathi Voidwalker, and Ragavan Nimble Pilferer.
So glad Ragavan made it in.
Let's make a little clap for our best card nominees. So as I said,
the winner goes to
We'll see you next week. We'll see you next week. You get to vote. This is the best part. So we will be doing this tomorrow. This releases on Monday. So make sure to check in for the live stream. It'll be at 7:30 p.m. on the Kes Wiley Twitch PM PSD on the Twitch. The Kes Wiley Twitch channel, and then we'll be released in edited format with pictures and all of that stuff the following Monday. But next Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. on Twitch, we'll be going through all these. But the link below the video, you can still vote. There's still time. Make sure to save what your picks were. I believe the system also does that, and there's a place that you can put your Twitter handle or a different place to contact you. Okay, because if you have the closest to the final bid, and if there's multiple people that get it perfectly correct, we'll be picking one at random. There'll be some prizes that we give away that we'll be announcing during the show that week. So thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for watching. Also, we have a new partnership with TCG Player. You can click a link below. If you click that link below, just basically from that point on, if you shop on TCG Player, it helps us. They help us, thinks you helped them. So just click on that link. Make sure you're logged in on TCG Player so they can track that you clicked on it. And that's all you have to do. You don't have to put a code in. You don't have to remember anything. Just click that link. That's super exciting. If you want to support the podcast even further, we do have a Patreon. You get early access to these videos. You had this last week. You could have been voting this whole time. You could have been already aware of what's going on, that this was already posted to the Patreon. We also have a Discord link below that's been opened up to the public, available for everyone. There's a lot of cool content that's going on there. There's like really dope modern 5-0 lists that keep getting posted that are really exciting. Affinity's back, baby. And that's the place to be. So make sure to check out the Discord as well. And you can follow me on Twitter at Kes Wiley. Ben is at Ben Bateman Media. And make sure to check out every Monday night, 7:30 p.m. We're doing a commander stream tonight. We'll be doing each playing a different commander deck from Modern Horizons 2 with the playlist. Michael Grothy and Marshall James will be joining. And thank you all for watching. Please hit that like, subscribe. If you're on iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review, all of those things. And we'll talk to you all next tomorrow, tonight, at all times. I'm always talking to you. Bye, everybody.
Yes, we will. Bye, guys.
This has been a production of Time Traveler Media, sending podcasts into the future.